From Tally to Cali,
it's time to wake up.
Wake up. WarChant.com is your ultimate Seminole sports source.
And this is Wake Up WarChant,
presented by Corner Pocket Bar and Grill.
One more Corner Pocket.
Now here's WarChant.com's ass on Hunchavandy
and Corey Clark.
What is up? It is Wake Up War Chant. It is presented by Corner Pocket Bar and Grill, Tallahassee, Florida. Website, cptallybar.com. QR code, hopefully on your screen, watching us on YouTube. It's also on your phone screen, listening to us on your Apple device. Hit it up. Go to the website. Check out the daily specials, lunch specials every single day. Tasty options. Also, entertainment. Plenty of entertainment daily. Tuesday, trivia night, right, Corey?
Yeah, that's right, buddy. There you go. You're learning. And Thursday's bingo.
That's right. How many times have you taken the title of trivia at Corner Pocket?
Zero, but I would have won the War Chant trivia one. I would have gone 30 for 30 on that one. Zero. I don't even think I placed. Maybe I got to get better teammates.
Okay. I'm about to say, you're pretty smart guy. How does Corner Pocket's trivia stand up to the other places that you've been at? Because you're competing all over the circuit.
Well, right. It's a little different because it's a lot of multiple choice questions, which helps you. But also, so if you don't know an answer, it at least gives you a shot. But also, if it's a specific topic where you know it cold, it helps the other teams. You can't get a big advantage because if they had like Florida State football as a topic and if five questions of Florida State football – well, I would know all of them, I would hope anyway, but the other people could guess and get three of them. So, you got to be consistent, Aslan. You got to be consistent throughout. There's six rounds. You try to do as well as you can in those 30 questions. I think the most we've gotten is like maybe 23 right out of 30, which I'm not proud of, but what are you going to do?
And that didn't
place you. Speaking of that, I played trivia last week at another establishment. It was not a Tuesday, I got called up to do a $50 question. If I got the answer right, I was going to win $50. Just me, by myself, in front of the whole bar. And it was what shiny metal is number 12 on the periodic table? I think it was like what shiny gray metal was 12 on the periodic table. And I happened to have Brady with me, but I wasn't allowed to look at him. But Brady knew it instantly and called me a dummy for not knowing it. Of course, I haven't looked at a periodic table, I don't know, man, 30 years?
Yeah.
Probably, at least. I think I did that when I was a freshman in high school, so longer than that. So I did not get it right. You got any guesses without cheating?
Silver?
Yeah, that's what I said. No, I said quartz, which isn't even an element.
Okay.
So I crushed that. Magnesium. Magnesium is 12.
Yeah, the only thing I know is, I think, like, what, the lower right corner are the noble gases, I think? That's the only thing I know from I could be totally wrong about that, too.
I thought noble was high to the right.
Maybe. There we go. Sorry, Pinellas County schools.
I might be wrong. Sorry, Gwinnett County. Either way, who cares, folks? We have the internet at our fingers. If I want to know what 12 is on the periodic table, I'll just type it in. Google. It'll tell me.
Oh, man. It is Tuesday, after all, so we're going to do Tuesdays with Tom. We're going to ask Tom Lang two questions that are a little bit, topical going on the world of collegiate athletics, mainly football. That's what you folks love. That's what I like. That's what we like providing for you folks. Do be on the lookout on warchant.com. Jeff Cameron, Irish O'Fell, Gene Williams, in no particular order of importance to this company, and myself made a little brief appearance. Just talked about the transfer portal, Corey, and whether or not there's immediate impact and how you would kind of grade out the 10 transfers now that we've kind of been a month or so now removed from spring practice. So those 10 gentlemen that have transferred in here, I should have all their names in front of me right now. That would probably help things out a little bit more. But of the 10 guys, when you think about instant impact, how many guys do you think are instant impact? I mean, we got four receivers. You got Trey Benson. You've got Greedy Vance, Jared Verse, Tatum Bethune, Bless Harris. All these sort of additions, how many of them would you say are kind of instant impact?
I mean, at least I'm trying to think of the ones that aren't. And I would say Deuce Spann.
Yeah.
And maybe Winston Wright, if he's not recovered. That's about it, right? Yeah, I think the other eight, you're expecting a lot out of. Greedy Vance has a lot more competition to deal with. But, yeah, Bless Harris could start, probably will start.
Yeah.
Jared Verse will start. Bethune will start. Two of those wide receivers will start.
Do we think Caden
is going to play a lot?
Do we think the thing – my thing was, like, yeah, Caden Lyles did not run first team during spring practice. I hope that doesn't get us in trouble, but he just didn't. So – you know, I think we were hoping for the world from that young man. Maybe we'll get it out of him somehow, but, you know, that might be depth. Johnny Wilson, I think, is probably going to be depth. I mean, I know you're really high on Johnny. We can agree to disagree maybe on that one. I feel really confident about Micah. That's almost kind of it. I guess Tatum Bethune, because I just will trust your guys' judgment. Jeff, Ira, you guys really love him and talked about how much he flashed. I don't remember seeing him do a lot during practice, but I was also – you know, editing video during large parts of it.
Yeah,
so,
but you definitely think he's going to start, right?
I don't know, man.
Well, yeah, he'll start. If he's healthy, he's starting. And Jared Verse, too. So if that's your like instant impact, like Jermaine Johnson impact, zero probably. But like starter impact, I think
Kier
you're
Thomas.
Looking at...
Yeah, give me some Kier Thomas.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think you're looking at maybe five or six Kier Thomases. Johnny Wilson's probably the biggest wild card of the bunch, literally and figuratively there. But yeah, I think at least six of those guys are starting. Caden Lyles might start. And again, you know, Micah Pittman didn't run with the ones the whole spring either. No, both of us know he's going to be running with the ones when it matters. So just because Caden Lyles didn't do a ton of that in the spring doesn't mean by the time Duquesne rolls around, he's not pancaking Dukes into the ground. Dukes is their – isn't that their nickname?
It is, correct.
It's not so, it's not their defensive tackle. I haven't looked at their roster that much, so it's not some defensive tackle named Dukes. But, yeah, so, I mean, we don't know, but I would say you're hitting – I would think six or seven of those guys, six, I would think, at minimum, are starting, are playing a significant role in the rotation. I think you're talking about six. Johnny Wilson, again, that's that guy is – I don't want to put a lot of pressure on
you
the kid,
are.
But the whole
you
season
are.
Might hinge on him. But no pressure, Johnny.
All right, moving along to the nation. There was a sit-down interview with Gene Smith, who's the athletic director at Ohio State, with a, I guess, you know, like a industry blog, athletic director U. A lot of these quotes kind of started making it onto Twitter about, you know, where do we go from regulating college football, managing it, and who's ultimately going to look over it. And, you know, I guess back in 2020, the Knight Commission, which – I mean, their website's available to everybody out there. You should check it out. It breaks down like all the revenue and finances and expenditures of pretty much every major collegiate program in the country. And back in 2020, they recommended, they were the ones that were like, listen, you know, basketball, Olympic sports, they are different than FBS football. Not just Power 5 football, but FBS football. I mean, you know, FCS programs are part of the NCAA. But FBS is just kind of a different monster altogether. I mean, they've got 85 scholarships. I mean, no other program is anywhere close to having that many players, student-athletes that are, you know, on room and board and books and tuition and all that kind of stuff. And then Gene Smith, the athletic director from Ohio State, pretty much says this is a line in the sand. It's a high priority, and they need to move when talking about regulating NIL. He just kind of thinks that they might be getting too far away from it, whether the enforcement can move fast enough. He says, if you can't do it, we'll run it ourselves. I mean, that sounds good, but is the NCAA going to be like, all right, fine, take away football, we'll handle everything else? I don't know how much is the NCAA really profiting off of college football, because it is it's been the BCS before that was the Bowl Alliance. Now we got the college football playoff. They're the ones that are kind of reaping all the money from it. So maybe the NCAA will want to wash their hands off it. Do we think there's a reason why they would or would not particularly?
Yeah, I mean, for the people that want to that don't know, the NCAA really doesn't make, like Aslan just alluded to, doesn't make a ton of money off college football. Those go strictly to the conferences mainly. The NCAA makes its money. It has its TV package for the NCAA tournament. That's what sponsors every other sport that you guys watch on TV or care about in college athletics is the NCAA basketball tournament. That's it, the men's. And women's, too. Women's is starting to make more money now, too. But that's how they pay for Well, softball now. I was going to say that's how they pay for Oklahoma City, but Oklahoma City is making money now too. The College World Series for the women in Omaha, but women's golf, men's tennis, all of these live on the back of the NCAA basketball tournament as far as is funding it. The funding for those sports comes from that. It's a huge TV contract. Football, not so much. They don't make a lot off that. And I think what Gene Smith is saying, and it looks to me, man, that it's not a coincidence that the AD at maybe the most powerful athletic university in the country, certainly one of the top two or three, and the commissioner of the ACC, both in the last week, have talked about maybe the NCAA, maybe college football is now too big. FBS football is now too big. Power Five, but FBS as a whole is too big for the NCAA to handle. And it's true. It's been that way for decades, by the way. But now it's more so than ever. And I think they're laying the groundwork to get this in the public consciousness that eventually it is going to break away. And the way they're talking, like his quote there, if you can't do it, we'll run it ourselves, talking about enforcing these NIL rules or other rules, portal rules, anything, if the NCAA is going to be asleep at the wheel or just not have the manpower, woman power to do it, then – yeah, there's too much people that are invested in this sport that aren't the NCAA that want to get it cleaned up and want to have real – I truly believe that, don't you, Aslan? I think they want to have real teeth in these rules.
Yeah.
They want to come up with a game plan, a blueprint, and have real teeth with enforcement, and they don't trust the NCAA to do that at all. Heck, it takes the NCAA 9 years to deliver verdicts on things. By that time, who knows if they'll even – we'll even be here. I mean, it's crazy. So trying to enforce this NIL stuff is – for the NCAA perspective that moves at the speed of a snail, isn't something that the people that matter in college football, that's not appealing to them at all. So it just seems like it's great gaining more and more traction that this is going to happen sooner rather than later. I thought personally that it would be – the thing that surprised me the most was when he said 130 schools. He said 130 schools have the same mission, same level investment. You could create your own rules. He's talking about college football teams, yeah. FBS football. Yeah. You don't touch anything else. Basketball tournament stays the same. Olympic sport competition stays the same. But football is different, and it's its own entity, which it has been for a long time anyway. You might as well make it official. I was surprised he said 130 schools. I would have said 60.
Yeah.
Personally, I would have said the Power Five. But maybe he doesn't want to alienate those other half of the country, those other schools that aren't Power Five schools. He wants them to all be in the a big ship. And then maybe the Power Five schools get their own dinghies off the ship, and they go boat by themselves. But for now, he's including those 130 schools. But yeah, man, he's speaking what we've thought was coming even before the NIL stuff. It just made sense because there is no teeth with NCAA enforcement. There just isn't, not anymore. So our it's never expedited either. But this, if they had their own working. Think about the NFL, man. I know I'm all over the place, and I keep stopping and starting sentences like Jimbo.
Let me jump in.
But
I'm just kidding.
But think about the NFL. They don't take 3 years. Maybe Brady Gate, the Deflate Gate. I can't remember the timeline on that.
That was forever. Yeah.
But other stuff like if the fines are they're divvied out a day later. You know, it just you don't have to have a 6 year investigation into something. To dole out fines or to say, no, you've broken this rule. Here's the consequences. And it's immediate. It would just be nice if that happened. I don't know how much more it's expedited. If it's pushed to its own side and it's its own entity. But I do think the people that matter will be highly invested and highly interested in getting in real enforcement in place because they care more than the NCAA does about college football. Gene Smith, you and I, and everybody listening to this show, care more about college football than the current leadership of the NCAA. And it's been that way for a while. I don't even know who the leader is now since Emmert stepped down, but it's always been that way. So it'd be nice if people that actually care about the sport are maybe running the sport, are steering the sport.
Power to the people.
Yeah,
power to
the steering people. The sport. That would be nice.
Quick math. In 2021, the NCAA generated $1.15 billion in revenue. $1.15 billion. $850 million of it was the contract between CBS and Turner for rights to the Division I men's basketball tournament.
Right.
And then $613 million was then turned around and paid to the member institutions. So that's like $500 million slush fund that goes to the NCAA that they get to, you know, do whatever they want with, pay all their people, overhead, things of that nature.
Yeah, Mark Emmert making whatever he's making, $6 million, $4 million a year to, you know, not do a whole lot.
So then how does it look? All right, I mean, there would have to be some sort of independent oversight. I mean, I love Archie Manning. Like, do we get Archie Manning and Charlie Werder? Like, do we have a small Supreme Court, like five of the most beloved dudes from each football conference? O.J. Simpson, maybe from the Pac-12. I don't know who you want to get from the Big Ten. Is Greg Sankey, how is Greg Sankey going to enforce whatever rules are going to be put in place? I know you talked about, hey, listen, football does it. It just feels like football is not nearly as tribal as college football is. It's not as fractured, and it's been together for so long. Like, to start this in the year 2022, 2023, like, all right, we're going to need to figure out a way to get all the conferences on board, the Power Five at least, to agree to some sort of constitution, and then how do we enforce the rules? Because I feel like, Corey, the only thing that's really come to light in my lifetime, at least recently that I can remember, is like the Ole Miss stuff with Laramie Tunsil getting shamed on draft day with the gas mask bong, and then the screenshots of him getting paid money, you know, from Ole Miss, and having a sort of guy that he could go to get money to help his parents pay off bills. Like, otherwise, there hasn't been a lot of like tattletaling between programs. Everybody's kind of like, all right, stay out of my way, I'll stay out of your way, and we'll figure things out. So how much really, I mean, do you think, I know we said that the NCAA wants to have teeth, they want to enforce rules and have it matter. Like, if you pull it away from an institution that's tried to do it for the last 80 years or whatever, and you start one from scratch, like, can you really, won't it just be honor system? And how far is that going to take us?
Well, let's hope it's not the honor system. And yeah, at the end of the day, it's up to the coaches that are getting cheated to actually turn in the cheating. And whether you feel like that's tampering or illegal payments, NIL stuff that's not above the table, whatever you deem that to be, it's up to them to figure that out themselves. But I think, you know, personally, I don't think that like the Kirby Smarts and Nick Sabans of the world are going to be cool with, they're not a fan of tampering in this NIL. I really don't think that. I think if they want real rules with real enforcement in place, I think that happens. I just do. I think, but yes, you're right. There's going to be under the table stuff, but it's got to be, you know, I don't even know how you police that. I don't know how you police the bagman stuff, but it's the NIL stuff that I think, if you're doing illegal things with your collective and it can be proven that you're not paying these kids, or you're not paying these kids for an actual service, you're just paying them to come to your school, and that's against your bylaws, well, then there will be, I would assume there'd be severe punishment, you would hope anyway, towards that institution or towards that collective. Now, maybe they just shift to another collective. It's like shell companies. I don't know how any of this stuff works. You can tell I don't have a ton of money to be, you know, moving around money in shell company. I'm not even quite sure what a shell company is. Honestly,
you just keep your money in escrow, right?
Yeah, right, right. Yeah, that yeah. And I'm not 100% sure about escrow either. I'll be honest with you.
Same.
So
Ira's so mad right now listening to us, like, stop talking. You know nothing about anything.
I know. But I think that it won't matter. A constitution won't matter if you're not enforcing it. But the NCAA has become a fraud and a joke when it comes to any of the big sports, really, but especially football. It's just a joke. And you can actually set up a system where there are real punishments levied quickly when you break the rules.
And but how, though? I mean, listen, they try to take
TV. I mean, just how any league does it. Like, the MLB came up with rules where if you got caught PED and it's a 60-game suspension. I mean, they do it. I mean, you just got to have the will of the participants.
But you can make people get drug tested, but like, are you going to make every school reveal their books to you? Like, does every player need to hand over their phone records at the end of every month?
I mean, they're so making what kind of money are they going to be making with these new TV deals? Billions upon billions of dollars.
Insane.
You can pay enough people to, yes, you can have an office that strictly looks at NIL deals. That if you go play college football, you have to, there's some sort of contract you sign where they're allowed to look at your documents, your financials for services rendered, whatever the case may be. Now, they're always going to be cheating, but there are avenues to at least try to tackle this. It's going to be, you know, it's not going to be easy, but, and moreover, like, it just needs to break away from the NCAA, whether they enforce these rules or not. I just think that college football is not anywhere close to what it was when the whole NCAA mission was developed, whenever that was. This is a multi-billion dollar business. It's the second, probably the second biggest business and biggest sport in the country, TV contract wise, eyeballs, all of it. So it's got to be run like that. It can't continue to be run like we're in the 60s or Bud Wilkinson's coaching in the 50s. Like, it can't be anymore. It's got to be run differently. And the NCAA just is not equipped to handle it. And they have tried to prove that time and time again in my lifetime. And they're still running it. The enforcement arm of it.
Well, they are equipped to do it. Just no one likes the sheriff, man. I mean,
but the sheriff sucks. Sometimes people don't like the sheriff because he's overbearing and he's in everybody's business. This sheriff is off in another valley somewhere. His head's down on a saloon table.
Well, they've tried, drunk, though. I mean, they instilled bowl, ineligibility. You couldn't be on television. Now, could you imagine telling Alabama, like, all right, you cannot be on national television for the next season? I mean, they everything that they ever had at their disposal for punishment has been ridiculed and mocked and either called heavy-handed or a joke. I mean, they start taking away wins, and then we're like, oh, that's stupid. We all know that those wins counted. We all saw them happen. Well, man, like, if you were cheating and that led to your success, then, like, what can we do retroactively? What are we going to – we're going to hurt the current football coach then? I just wonder, like, who's going to be ultimately punished? They just need to somehow figure out a way to I just think the only way to get it done is, yes, they're going to have to break away. And, man, everything's going to have to go through the schools. Like, these collectives, I mean, I don't know, maybe they get rolled into a Department of Revenue or something at these universities, but it's got to be the schools that are going to get in trouble because, like, what, are you going to punish the player? Like, if the player is the one that signed the contract, pay for play, like, does he get suspended? The school's got to be the one that gets hit. I mean, that's probably the quickest and easiest way that you can enforce stuff. Like, all right, $75,000 fine because you tampered with this guy outside the window. Just like NBA free agency, there's a certain window you can talk to free agents, and if you talk to them before midnight, it's tampering. Like, you have to be able to hit the actual, like, institutions, the franchises, the schools, because, I mean, when players get hurt, like, everybody falls down on the NCAA and says it's cruel and unfair. The only way to make it uniform and quick is, like, all right, we're gonna hit the schools, man. Like, the schools are gonna get hit, the coach are gonna get served, show cause, or they're gonna get suspended. That's probably the quickest and cleanest way to do it, I feel like.
Well, and maybe look, man, NIL is gonna be an issue until something radically changes, if it ever does. It just is. There's way too much gray area. It's so much gray area, it's black. And there's no way really to police it. What maybe separating from the NCAA does is allows those kids to become employees of that university.
Ugh, nope.
And
nope,
then that's,
nope,
I mean, that's,
out,
I mean, that's
out. I'm out. I'm out. Nope.
Okay, but then you, that could, that's what, you couldn't do it if you weren't separate from the NCAA, because then every athlete would have a claim to be an employee and to have a contract and to
employee,
get money.
Employee.
But if you break away and you say, oh, the SEC just signed a $8 billion contract for the next 9 years. Okay, 33% of that is going to the SEC football players, just like it does in the NFL. Every time the NFL signs a new lucrative TV deal, a portion of that money goes to the players, and that's how they get paid. So that could be what you would do if you broke away. Otherwise, yeah, man, I don't want to take money out of a kid's hands if somebody's offering him $40,000 to go play and actually, you know. But, you know, you brought up that I just always come back to Todd Gurley. You said they couldn't penalize the player. That kid missed half a season for signing autographs and getting paid for it. That's the old NCAA.
Yeah, well, no one likes that. That's what I'm saying. So, like, we can agree that was screwed up. Like, yeah, but, I mean, I guess if we're not going to get him in trouble for that, which was a rule, you couldn't do it at that time, then, like, Georgia's got it. Someone's got to get in trouble, and I guess it's probably more palatable if we see a university having to spend $80,000 or pay some, like, all right, I don't know, their coach gets suspended for a game. Like, that probably won't be nearly as, you know, it won't get Twitter as upset if we're using that as the pulse of everything.
No, I think if it's something like that, when it's blatant, if they find that you're blatantly cheating, the only thing that matters, it's not vacated wins, it's not being on TV, which hasn't been a thing since the mid-80s. I remember not being able to watch Florida State, Florida, because they were always on probation. A whole SEC was on probation. Auburn went a whole season not losing a game, and nobody saw it because they were on probation, and they weren't allowed to be on TV or go to a bowl. The only thing that matters is scholarship reductions. Okay. That's the only thing that speaks to anyone, and it's the only thing that really matters. You saw what happened to Miami.
All they do is like two or three, though. Like you.
No, it's got to be significant. Yeah, it's got to be what they did to Miami. I think they did to USC back the Reggie Bush thing, maybe.
Yeah.
They tried to do it with Penn State with the Paterno stuff, and I think they reinstated all that. But with Miami in the late 90s, that's why they were so bad and they were losing 47-0 to Florida State in 97 was because of the scholarship reductions, because of the cheating they had done with the Pell Grant thing. That's the only thing that matters. That's the only punishment with teeth. So that would have to always be on the table, I would think. But other than that, man, I don't know. We're just two dudes talking about something that's very, very complex. But it is the overarching point is that it does, when you have Gene Smith and Jim Phillips both mentioning it in the same week, the same month, it's definitely there's something building. This isn't just random. There is traction to try to get this done. And I think, again, it's so goofy that the NCAA oversees, you know, men's golf and women's tennis, and they make no money and nobody goes and watches them. I love you guys. Hope you win championships. Nobody goes and watches those things. And then you have this other sport, which is a Goliath, and it's the same oversight committee. It's the same oversight,
apparatus and everything, man.
The apparatus is the exact same. For volleyball, beach volleyball, men's golf, and college football. It's nuts. So it just needs to be off on its own because it's not like all the other sports. It's just not. Even college basketball is closer to volleyball than college football is. So I'm all for that because this is a mess. And maybe it can be a little bit more under control if they break away, but it might just all not matter. There you go. There you go. That's 25 minutes of your lives you'll never get back, ladies and gents.
Time for Tuesdays. Emphasis. Tuesdays with Tom right after this.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right. You asked for it. You wanted more. It's more. It's Tuesday with Tom. We're going to ask Tom two topical questions on Tuesday to get his take on things, because that's what you folks want. What's up, Tom? How are you, man?
Good evening, Aslan. Good evening, Corey. How are you guys? Well, good morning, yes, technically, but y'all know what I mean.
Yeah. Corey, what's up, T-Lang? Hey, congrats on the Lightning, man.
What an unexpected pleasure, Corey. Like, honestly, you know, I know they're two-time defending champs, but I didn't see that coming. That was a nice Saturday night at the Lang household. I promise you that.
And then your wife, your lovely wife, Rangers, won the next night.
That's right. Every night of our lives is now filled with Stanley Cup playoff hockey. So if you ever need a breakdown on how the Rangers' second and third lines look no further than here. I'll have an update for you next Tuesday.
That's enough hockey talk.
Yeah, okay.
All right, let's talk football. That's Tom's cup of tea. It's your cup of tea. Let's get right to it then. I saw this on the internet on the Bird app, guys. Brian Fisher from Athlon Sports pointed out notable that despite everything that's going on with the NIL situation where perhaps the NCAA would come down, he says, despite several active investigations, including one into a noteworthy collective, not a single school has reported violations of the NIL interim policy to the NCAA enforcement or various Power 5 compliance offices, and this has now been in effect since July 1st. So they opened up the gates to the NCAA last Monday to say, hey, police yourselves. No one's going to police themselves, Tom. So do we play the good boy scout, or do we roll up our sleeves in a race to the bottom and start befriending even more high school coaches and be like, hey, that cornerback you had 2 years ago that's running third string right now in Tuscaloosa, you want to see if he wants to come to Tallahassee and compete for a starting job? Do we need a tampering? Is that needed? Is that going to be less of a taboo thing maybe here in the next few months until somebody reports somebody for something?
Yeah, I think, you know, whatever middlemen you need to contact, make sure that you have them in the Rolodex, that you can have them on speed dial. I saw Nick Saban made a comment about tampering because Alabama was accused of maybe getting in early with Louisville's wide receiver who came down there. And he said, I have no knowledge of anybody on my staff who's doing anything wrong. Plausible deniability is a hell of a thing. That's what I would engage in if I'm Florida State. They've done their due diligence. Most programs have done their due diligence. They've reached out to the proper powers and saying, we need help. And if no help is forthcoming, you don't want to go down swinging if you're Mike Norvell playing it, quote unquote, the right way. If this is the realistic way to get things done, then it's what you need to do until you see the deterrent present itself and other schools, and hopefully not Florida State, but you see a message has been sent. But until that deterrent is really out there and you understand what the penalty would be, then you have to engage in modern day recruiting, which is basically pay for play and tampering. That's the way things go these days.
I had to use Google. I'm not showing off, Tom. It's Tyler Harrell is the name of the receiver that you were referencing that left Louisville to go to Alabama. 18 catches for 523 and 6 touchdowns last year. Don't even remember him. Maybe he caught one of the touchdowns against us in the first half. Had no recollection, though. Corey,
odds are he did.
Yeah.
Odds are he was one of them. Yeah.
Corey, you don't like any of this new stuff. I don't want to make you the old guy shaking his fist at the cloud. I kind of am, but I'm hiding behind you mostly. I know you don't like a lot of this stuff. I mean, you're cool paying the players that have earned it and done stuff. You don't like paying the unknown commodities, if you will. But when it comes to tampering, I mean, we're not coming out here and trying to say like, let's be illegal or whatever. But I mean, is that going to have to be part of the strategy of recruiting? Is going to be tampering until somebody goes down for it somewhere?
I mean, I don't know if it, like there's a difference between tampering and maybe if you're an assistant coach and one of the players you recruits spurns you on signing day, maybe keeping a relationship with that kid. There's no rules against that. Maybe when the kid has 2 touchdowns in the third game of the season, maybe you text them, hey, man, congratulations. I'm always your biggest fan. You know that. You got a big fan in me, Coach Dugans. Whatever you got to say, whatever you're in your text with. I don't know that that's tampering or you might – I mean – you know, I'm sure the coach of the team that kid's playing on probably doesn't want him to be texting other assistant coaches. But I think, you know, with the way the rules are in place, there's, you know, back in the day, man, if you told a coach no, like there's that famous story of Spurrier when Tommy Pauly, who ended up playing the league for like 5 or 6 years, was on the national championship team as a linebacker. When he told Spurrier that he was going to choose Florida State, Spurrier just said, well, I always thought you were a better basketball player anyway, and hung up. That was how he took that news. I don't think that's going to be happening much anymore. I think the coaches now, even say if your prize recruit decides to go to an FCS school and plays for a former cornerback of yours, maybe you still have a bit of a relationship with that kid and extend olive branches just in case he wants to maybe see where the grass is greener in a year or two. So I don't know if that's tampering, but it makes absolutely no sense not to keep up relationships with these kids, even when they go to a different school now. Don't cut them off. Don't take their number out of your phone. Stay in contact with them. They're all recruitable athletes now. They're all recruitable athletes. The quarterback at Louisville, he is a recruitable athlete right now in the way the rules are. And I definitely don't have a problem with people paying our players making money. I have a problem with the way this is, not enforced and the way it's just everybody's throwing their hands up in the complete anarchy of it. So if it's going to be anarchy, keep a relationship with all those guys.
We have a video that's going to be dropping on YouTube with Jeff, Ira, Gene, myself making a cameo appearance, just talking about the portal overall and whether or not Florida State's like at a trade surplus or deficit when it comes to losing 16 guys, but then signing 10 guys from the transfer portal. And, you know, we keep joking about the Jarvis Brownlee thing about, you know, hey, they did a trade with Louisville for him because we got Greedy Vance, they got Jarvis Brownlee. But, you know, they recruited Greedy when they still had Jarvis Brownlee. So they're trying to kind of fill that gap by recruiting this DB from Louisiana Monroe. But turning to quarterback, it was a question on the agenda, but we didn't get to it in the video. And it was, do you agree with Mike Norvell being all in on Jordan Travis and Tate Rodemaker quarterback? It's, you know, we've beaten this to death. We're covered in horse blood in front of all you folks right now. But, you know, it's May. We're trying to give you something to talk about and be entertained with. You know, he recruited Chubba Purdy, Tate Rodemaker in 2020, said no thanks to Jeff Sims. I don't think Jeff Sims maybe is an answer, but maybe Jeff Sims is close enough to Jordan Travis that you could kind of seamlessly put him into your lineup. But they did lose Chubba Purdy. I don't know if getting A.J. Duffy was like, all right, we lost Chubba, we're going to fill the gap in with A.J. Duffy. Because right now, man, you're going to the season with three quarterbacks on scholarship with a combined 8 wins. That's got to be, I don't know, in the bottom percentile of Power 5 football right now. So are they ultimately making a mistake standing pat, Tom? I mean, they lost Chubba. Was getting AJ, was that apples to apples, or should they still have gotten somebody that might have been able to be a little bit more prepared? Because Tate feels like at best year 3, which would be this season, or most likely year 4 being ready for you. Is that the way you need to be going into football seasons?
Yeah, it's a tough call. I think it's a situation where if they were going to make a move, they should have done it before spring. I think right now would be too late. Even if you found somebody who kind of fits the Jordan Travis version of Mike Norvell's offense, and this offense is going to take on many forms. If Norvell is successful enough to be here for another 5-6 years, you're going to see very different forms of that offense take place. So the problem is, was there ever a unicorn out there who was better than Tate? Not necessarily as good as Jordan, because you got to worry about the temperature of the locker room too. You don't want to create discord in the locker room if Jordan is a leader and he's finally taken over the reins from Mackenzie Milton and he's got everybody's trust. Do you want to upset the apple cart for one season when you've got help on the way with AJ Duffy and Chris Parson coming in the next class, assuming that FSU closes with that kid? I think it was a really tough situation where you needed a magic bullet of a quarterback or a prospect to bring in order for this whole thing to work and everybody to be simpatico. In the end, I think Tate Rodemaker's performances in spring probably put the coaching staff in a position where they look okay. If Tate was horrible in spring, I might sound differently, but Tate wasn't horrible. I don't think FSU is doomed to automatically lose if Jordan Travis goes down and Tate Rodemaker comes into the game. But I could be wrong, and you could all be laughing at me in 4 months if Tate comes in and he's awful. I think that whatever that prospect was that FSU needed to fit into the quarterback room was such a narrow qualification level of a quarterback, qualification level of a player. I don't know that guy was out there.
Yeah, you would need either like the Caleb Williams kid, or I don't know what that needle is you have to thread between Jordan Travis and Tate Rodemaker. Yep. And why a kid would come take that spot. It was just, it's what we've been talking about for literally since Thanksgiving, is about, you know, Jordan Travis did enough to prove that he's a capable college quarterback. He's not a Heisman winner. He's not an All-American. He's a capable college quarterback. And who is going to come to Florida State when they're not a guaranteed to start? Like, you know, it's hard to find a kid willing to do that. So you either had to go to the lower ranks and hope you get a guy that wants to play big-time college football and the chance to be at Florida State as a quarterback after playing at, I don't know, Presbyterian or something, or Caleb Williams. That middle ground is really tough, man. That's why Chubba left. And Chubba's we're not sure he's any great shakes. I don't think he's in line to be the Nebraska starter. But, you know, that's tough to find. It's tough to find. And the reality is most college programs, if they lose their starting quarterback, they're going to struggle a good bit. Miami somehow last year did the impossible and improved tenfold by playing their backup quarterback. But that doesn't realistically, that happens once every 5 years. That just doesn't happen. So you're going to struggle more with Tate Rodemaker than you would with Jordan Travis. That's why there's a depth chart and one is on top and one isn't. But Rodemaker's about as good as you could have gotten in the portal anyway, right, Tom? Isn't that what we kind of think?
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, you would have needed to find a grad transfer who was here temporarily, who was better than Tate. Oh, well, but you're right, Corey, to point that other side of it out. If you found somebody who makes the program better and it's unequivocally just a better player, the rest of the locker room would follow that quarterback.
Sure. And if you hurt Jordan Travis's feelings, oh, well, man, sorry, bud. It's Caleb Williams.
But given where this program is right now, the more likely idea would be you'd find a grad transfer who's here temporarily, who's just good enough to be better than Tate, and maybe he's more in sync with what Jordan Travis runs offensively. I just don't know if that dude was out here because, again, A.J. Duffy has an eye towards 2023. I'm sure Chris Parsons coming in thinking that if he enrolls early and he plays in spring, that he could be a starter sooner than later. So you didn't want to find a multi-year option. It's just, it seems like a really short runway to land a plane on. And I think that's where it ended up being, where the coaching staff said, we'll row with what we got.
I mean, I hate constantly bringing up Lane Kiffin on the show, but he's my guy. And it's probably the closest comparison we can make to what Mike Norvell's going through. They got hired in the same coaching cycle, inherited teams that were kind of in similar record success. You know, when he stole Luke Altmaier away from Mike Norvell, that was Mike Norvell's sort of stopgap. That was a really big part of his plans for the future, and he lost them. He lost them to Ole Miss, lost them to Lane Kiffin. He brought Luke Altmaier to sit behind Matt Corral for one season and then take over the starting job. He did not look all that great in limited duty, so he went and got Jackson Dart from Southern Cal. I mean, like, those guys were out there. Just do we believe, I guess I'll start with you again, Tom, do we just ultimately believe that a guy like Jackson Dart, all right, fine, I'll come to Oxford because I can beat Luke Altmaier because he's not established. Whereas he would have been like, well, you know, Jordan Travis has won 8 football games in the last 2 years. I can't overcome that hill.
Yeah, I think it's probably an assessment of the 11 on the offense, the other 10 players. Like, you know, if this offensive line could handle any type of quarterback and you think that they're going to protect the passer, it doesn't matter. So I'm going to bring in anybody, not to say that Jackson Dart's a certain type of player. I'm just saying when you're assessing this, you're assessing two things. The future of your quarterback room, is this going to bother the program for 2023 and 2024, what I'm trying to do with the high school recruiting circuit, and then the immediate term, Jordan can run for his life in a way that very few other players in college football can. So if the offensive line continues to be below average, we've got the perfect guy at the right time. The only question here is about his health. He's good enough to be a starter, certainly where Florida State is as a program right now. It's, can he play 12 games and what do you do in case of emergency? I don't know if the payoff was worth the risk if you're trying to bring in a guy in that particular situation, because again, this is not a ready-made offense. This is kind of a MacGyver offense, and this is the Swiss Army knife of a quarterback that you might need in this moment.
And going back to the Dart example, why would he come to Florida State? Like, what is alluring to him about Florida State? Not only have they not won a lot of games
offense
recently,
for playmakers, Corey, offense the for offense playmakers. Isn't,
the offense playmaker. Hasn't been great, but moreover, As a player that's looking to go play because you just got recruited over by your new coach and they brought in the hotshot kid from Oklahoma, you want to go to a place where you feel like you have a legitimate chance to win the job. It is an open competition, not somebody that where there's a starter entrenched. Whether that starter's great or not, why would Jackson Dart go to Florida State when he's not convinced the coaches will give him a fair shake? I'm not saying Norvell and staff wouldn't. They would, but he doesn't know that, and that's a big decision, man. He can't do it again. But he can go to Ole Miss where there is no established starter, right? He actually has a much better chance. It's why Chuba left. And Chuba, it didn't work out for Chuba. It might not work out for Jackson Dart, but he has a better chance of being a starting quarterback at Ole Miss in his mind than he does it at Florida State, because Florida State has a guy that's played now for 2 years. It's hard to come in and usurp one of those guys, no matter how good you think you are. You think you're behind the eight ball, and I want to go to a place where I can play immediately, and I don't have to learn behind Jordan Travis, and I don't have to wait for him to get hurt. So that's what made it so difficult. They might have reached out to Jackson Dart. We have no idea, and he might have been like, "Nah, no thanks. You already got a guy. I'm not sure I can beat him out. I'm not that.
Well, is that worse?
I'm not sure it's going to be a fair competition. I'm not sure it's going to be a fair competition. That's what I think he thinks. Right. I'm coming in behind the eight ball because there's an incumbent, and it's harder to knock off the incumbent. Just like in boxing, when you're fighting the champ, you better beat him significantly or the champ's going to remain the champ. I think it's the same way in quarterback battles, especially when one guy is a team leader and has been here for 3 years. It's just tough. It's a tough situation to walk into.
I know, but isn't it an art, though, guys? Isn't it an art to be able to recruit a kid and lay out the facts and the truth, but at the same time, like, leave the door ajar for a guy? I mean, or is that not fair to kind of, I don't want to criticize him, but just again, I don't want to criticize Mike Norvell and pile on him, but it just, again, like he recruited Luke Altmyer, he recruited Chuba Purdy, he lost two of those guys, and he filled them with a true freshman from IMG that looks like maybe, you know, give him another year or two, something could happen. But like in the here and now, if Jordan Travis goes down, like you're rolling with Tate Rodemaker. That could be like a really disastrous play for him. I mean, isn't there an art that we should maybe expect out of the head football coach of Florida State?
Well, there's no doubt that there's a risk. There's a risk there. If he gets hurt, and let's say that it comes out, you know, it's 3 weeks. Three games he's going to miss. I mean, yeah, they're probably going to stare at the wall and say, all right. So if we're not already the most unlucky staff in America, here's another reason that we might be. But the thing I'd also say is, and it hurts, I know it hurts for an old fan to hear this, and trust me, I'm one, but Lane Kiffin's reputation is stronger as well. The opportunity is better at Ole Miss right now. You got to prove it if you're Mike. Lane might not have proven it at the Power 5 level that as a head coach, as he has a coordinator. As a coordinator, his bona fides are absolute. With Alabama, those are absolute. As a head coach, maybe still something to prove, but that's still a better reputation. If you're a kid making a decision between Ole Miss and Florida State, I'm sorry, it's kind of a no-brainer right now. It's the same thing if you're a wide receiver who's a hotshot. You really want to come here this year? That's why I'm surprised they were able to get four. They were able to get four receivers who were coming here, and they think that there is enough of an opportunity. If you're Florida State, your reputation in the immediate is not great. Over the last 30 years, fantastic. In the immediate, not so strong. I don't know that this is a more attractive place for several reasons right now.
There we go. It was supposed to be two with Tom, but I went ahead and threw three. Tuesdays with Tom. Tom, thanks for doing this, man.
Always a pleasure.
I love you.
WarChant.com is the ultimate inside source for FSU football and recruiting. And now you can get in on the action for free for an entire month. WarChant.com is offering a risk-free 30-day trial subscription. Get full access to the number one website covering the Seminoles just by entering the promo code WarChant30. That's WarChant30. Sign up and get in on the world's most active FSU message boards. Receive breaking news, stories from our award-winning staff, plus get exclusive interviews and videos. Just enter the promo code WarChant30. WarChant.com, your ultimate Seminole sports source.